Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol, but first, Wis I Was There. Tax credits for 578,000 caregivers, lifetime health care for families of police officers and EMTs killed in the line of duty. Superintendent of Public Instruction Carolyn Stanford Taylor talks about why test scores have declined, and that decline has been noticed by Republican legislators. And I asked the chair of the Public Service Commission about climate change. Wis I Was There.
Today, more than 578,000 people in the state are providing care for their loved ones, and nearly 60% pay for those expenses out of their own pockets. The CARE Act ensures that they have the knowledge they need, while the Credit for Caring Act provides a tax credit to help out with expenses.
The typical working age household has less than $3,000 saved for retirement. So we will be scheduling listening sessions across the state to make sure that we really understand what's going on, what's stopping people, and what can we do to be better.
The PAW Act more effectively addresses the crime of sexual contact with an animal by increasing the penalty to a felony, making sexual contact a sex crime, increasing penalties for repeat offenses, and making a technical change to the definition of sexual contact with an animal.
The last thing an officer needs to be worrying about is whether or not their family will be protected by health insurance coverage if something bad should happen to them. The bill requires the entities to employ police officers or EMTs to provide continuing health insurance coverage for the families of those killed in the line of duty.
This bill is timely and critically necessary to provide a safe work environment for not only nurses, but all healthcare workers. The likelihood of healthcare workers of being exposed to violence is higher than prison guards or police officers, and that nurses are 5 times more likely to be assaulted at work.
We are too concerned about the slight decline in the scores, and we know that many of our rural schools and some of our urban schools are not doing as well because they don't have all of the resources that they need to do the best job that they can. Until we can help students with some of the barriers that exists for them, they're not available for learning as readily as some of their peers.
What's at stake in this debate over carbon-free by 2050? What's the downside?
Not only are we literally going to see our country shrink, but we're going to see all of the species that inhabit the country, they're going to continue to become extinct as well. And I don't know. What's going to be left? What's going to be left? We have one Earth. We need to take care of it.
A few weeks ago, when Governor Evers and Democrats talked about a generic red flag law and the need for universal background checks, he wasn't pushed like you pushed the governor this week on whether you're going to call a special session. Because now we have a specific red flag law. Let's get it right. What's it called? The Extreme Risk Protection Orders Act. And so there was this press conference. You pushed the governor. Will you call a special session? He said yes. So let's talk about that. If the legislature won't act in the fall session, he will call it. The bill would let family members and law officers petition judge for an order preventing someone from possessing a firearm. Before we get into the response from Fitzgerald and Voss, what's your take on what happened this week?
Well, the question was, you said before, Governor, you'd call a special session. Why not call one now? And he said he would if they don't act within weeks. So, okay, now the clock is running. Now, the thing about special sessions is this. The governor cannot force lawmakers to act. He can call them back in.
And that is so important.
But they don't have to take up the bill.
Right.
And there's no sign whatsoever that Voss and Fitzgerald will take up either of the two bills talked about today. They actually found a kind of a tangent to go off on in response to this news conference to make the focus for them not about politically popular bills such as a red flag law or universal background checks, but about taking assault rifles.
Yeah, okay. And that came up tangentially, But now let's talk about the formal response of Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker. This legislation, referring to Red Flag, poses threats to due process and the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. The Democrats' real agenda is taking away firearms that are lawfully owned, which is unacceptable. And then you and I saw a statement from Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke. This is a non-starter. Mm-hmm. So, as you said, the governor can call the session, but doesn't force any action by the ledge. So when the governor says within weeks, he's looking past, how many days are we going to be in session?
Looks like two right now, I think, in both houses. So I think the Senate.
One a month?
It's something like that. But they're supposed to actually have, they have floor periods set aside in September, October, November. I believe the Senate is looking at 2 days right now for sure.
Okay.
I think the Assembly at least one, if not two. But it's not a very heavy calendar this fall. I mean, honestly, I don't know what they're got to do. I mean, yeah, we have a lot of appointments from Governor Evers to his cabinet haven't been confirmed yet.
Right.
But they're still trying to figure out, and they're going to meet as caucuses before long. Figure out, well, okay, guys, what do you want to do? And I'm talking about the Republicans because they have to set an agenda.
Okay.
What do they want to get done? What can they get done? What's worth getting done and signing the governor's desk? Because he won't sign certain bills that they might want to do. It's like, what can we get done?
So the news in this press conference this week is the actual flushing out the idea of the red flag law and how it would work, right?
We got more details, and then Republicans get on this tangent where Evers was asked about the Beto O'Rourke proposal to buy back assault rifles.
Beto O'Rourke, who said, I'm coming for your AR-15s.
Conservatives have called that buyback program confiscation. Evers was asked, do you support that? He said, I'm focused on these two bills we're talking about today.
Universal background checks.
Follow-up question was, does that mean no? He said, well, I'd consider it, but my focus is on this. That I consider it became the Republican response of, the truth is Evers wants to take away your guns. I'm not sure that's what Evers wanted to talk about or trying to get across, but that gave Republicans this opportunity to talk about, here's what we want to talk about, because
right.
That's unpopular, not these two bills, which are quite popular. Just look at the Marquette poll. They're both like 80% issues.
Yeah. Okay. So it's time to hear a little bit of more than a minute from that press conference with the governor talking about guns. Please.
In a state where nearly three of four gun deaths are suicide, having an IRPO process could be an important tool in helping us address firearm-related suicides in Wisconsin and to intervene to get folks help and treatment they need in crisis. Every single Republican in the legislature needs to be asked on the record whether or not they support creating an IRPO process, just as they should be asked whether or not they support universal background checks. And if they don't, they need to answer for why they won't take reasonable steps to make our communities safer. Enough is enough, folks.
Under the IRPO process, if a person is likely to injure themselves or another person, a family member or law enforcement officer may petition the court to temporarily prevent that person from owning and possessing a firearm. A court would issue a temporary order and an injunction based on the findings that the respondent is substantially likely to injure themselves or another person. Under this bill, an IRPO injunction would be effective for up to 1 year, and it could be extended by petition for periods if the courts believe that that person continues to be a risk to themselves and other people.
We will call a special session if they don't act in the very near future.
Topic number two, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, who we just quoted on the gun issue, mm-hmm. formally announced that he's going to seek the 5th District seat, given up by the retiring veteran congressman, dean of our congressional delegation, James Sensenbrenner. Let's just do the bio. Scott Fitzgerald is 55. He was elected to the Senate in 94, been majority and minority leader, largely majority leader since 2004. He was reelected in 18, so he won't have to give up his Senate seat. JR, I want to ask you, the election is not for 14 months. Why is he announcing 14 months early?
Oh, the rush is on. He's got to get an operation in place, get a campaign going, start raising money. The potential field hasn't changed a whole lot, but it's narrowed from when we've talked about this the last few weeks. So we've got Leah Vukmir's out, Dale Koyanga is out.
Paul Farrow's out.
Farrow's out. My source tells me Chris Capinga is expected to get in.
Really?
What I hear back from Matt Newman and Matt Walker, Ben Volkel's still out there, Adam Nalin. What I've been hearing about Fitzgerald this week is, okay, the people I talk to about politics and kind of synthesize their comments for you every week, they're insiders or people who live in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Fitzgerald is their candidate because they know Fitzgerald. I mean, this is the guy who's been in the Capitol for 25 years. led the GOP caucus in the Senate for a dozen years. They see him as a front runner. The issue for Fitzgerald is he's from a part of the district that isn't really the population
center. The northern part.
And as this field, if it narrows, you're talking Fitzgerald, Kapinga, and to be determined, it becomes an interesting equation. All right, what's the lane for everybody, and what can they draw for a percentage? Now, if it's a five-person field, you can win at 25%.
Yeah.
But if it's two or three, it becomes a much different equation for Fitzgerald of, like, he has to tap into that Waukesha market in order to start to attract votes. Now, talk radio will have a huge influence on this race. Outside groups will probably play in this race. But Fitzgerald, he's got that brand in Madison, but what's he have for a brand in Waukesha? Whereas Chris Kapinga, for example, he's got some personal money. He's a successful businessman.
From Delafield.
What can he put into this race? What will he want to put in the race? You know, money is important in something like this. Matt Newman, for example, his dad, Mark Newman, former congressman. Matt Newman has worked in the family business, you know, building homes and new developments. He, we think, has some personal wealth to put into this campaign. Those things can make a difference in a race like this.
Well, okay, thanks for filling in the last couple of weeks when I was gone. What's the latest on Matt Walker, in or out?
Still thinking about it, so I've not heard for sure what he's going to do. Kevin Nicholson's still out there, too, thinking about it. So, you know, all the years I've covered politics, there's a big difference between thinking about running and actually pulling the trigger. And the question is, do you have the fire in the belly? You know, Fitzgerald, we believe, has a fire in the belly for this because he's won it for so long. I mean, there's... Look, you know, I'm a geek about things. I've acknowledged that. But if you look at the maps that were drawn in 2011 for the 5th and 6th congressional districts.
I love this point you're going to make.
If you go the 5th and 6th districts, there's a line goes straight east to west, gets to Horicon and dips south and goes back up and goes back east again. Well, Horicon is where Jeff Fitzgerald, Scott's brother, lives. And Fitz is in Juneau, which stays on here. It kept those guys in different congressional districts. Now, it could be coincidence.
No, it's
but
not.
It's just a sign to some people of he has eye on this for a long time, and he's ready to go.
Okay, just one final question on this. In his statement, Senator Fitzgerald said, "Washington is a mess. Liberals and the elite have ignored the needs of working class people. President Trump has made tremendous strides in fixing the D.C. dysfunction, but he needs more help." Well, the Marquette poll shows Trump upside down. So why is he saying, "I'm go there to help a president who's upside down in Wisconsin"?
Because that upside down is with the general voting population. We're talking about a Republican base that has really embraced Trump. Now, Trump has got problems with suburban voters. But are those suburban voters who are general election voters or are they Republican primary voters? Yeah, there's Republicans who are not big fans of Trump. But those who turn out in a primary, that population, we're talking about turnout's going to be what, like 35% in a primary, 30? I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head. So start peeling it off from like everybody turns out to like percentage of Republicans who turn out.
Yeah.
We're talking the base of the base. The Marquette poll shows he's pretty popular, Trump, with the base. So it's not a bad place to be. Now, I'm not sure exact breakdown of Trump's numbers in the 5th Congressional District. But
okay,
he's embracing the person who's really been embraced by the Republican
Party. But at one of your Wisconsin events, didn't the Democratic chair said this is a tough win for his party in the 5th?
Oh, yeah. It's a way Republican seat. They're,
okay.
You know, the guy who ran against Sensenbrenner last time is going to run again. He got 38% of the vote. This is not a swing seat. You know, if Trump, completely cratered, was eviscerated somehow between now and next November, maybe it's competitive. But that's like how Republican it is.
Okay. All right. New topic. The governor and his Department of Administration today announced where the additional 65 new assistant district attorneys will be.
Mm-hmm.
And the winners there, Marathon County will get 3.5 more and three additional prosecutors in Brown. And Milwaukee, Waukesha will get 2.5. Eight other counties will get two additional assistant district attorneys. I asked Fiscal Bureau, the cost of hiring 65 new prosecutors is $5 million. This is a 15% increase in the number of ADAs. This was part of the budget. Any PSs? I know we're going to come back to it later.
A couple. To understand the numbers better, remember in the budget, there are actually two provisions that dealt with assistant DAs. Governor Evers had his own proposal originally to add about 30 roughly. Republicans tweaked that proposal a little bit. Then they added about 35 positions. And I'm saying about because they're called full-time equivalents, FTEs we call them. Well, we already
knew. Senator Jock who demanded that, right?
Yep, one of several.
Yes.
Already knew where 30 positions were going to go anyway. They were locked in the budget. But Evers uses veto pen to eliminate the allocation of those 34.85 FTEs that were added in the budget process. The announcement this week filled in the gaps of where those jobs are going to go.
Yes.
So Milwaukee County was not going to get any new DAs, assistant DAs in the budget. They got three more. Rock County wasn't going to get any. They got one more. But there are five counties, Columbia, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, Marathon, and Monroe. They will still add position authority, okay, mm-hmm. but not get as much under the Evers plan as they would have under the GOP plan.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting, and we're going to come back to that in a little bit. New topic, we're America's Dairyland, but there's this very interesting fight between, in 2006, DATCAP, Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, adopted a rule dealing with setbacks. Livestock siting is the issue. Now, when I interviewed Secretary Paff this week, he said, this rule hasn't been updated in 13 years, and we're on the second or third revision, but it's very controversial. And here's why: it pits the Farmers Union, which supports it, and DATCAP, saying, hey, we're going to come forward with a rule. We think it's overdue, against the Farm Bureau, Dairy Business Association, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and a few other groups. What I find intriguing is the rule. It's important to say the rule would only let local governments adopt these new standards. In other words, it's not DATCAP saying these are the new standards. Local governments have to sign on. And the new standards would only apply to new farms, the new large CAFOs, and any farm that wants to expand. So I'm kind of a wonk on this issue. What's your take?
Interesting that, one, so to build on what you said, the state does not require these setbacks, but it says in this rule, okay, Lois, if you want to do these setbacks, yeah. here are the guidelines for you.
And they're bigger setbacks.
Yes. For example,
manure storage units
farther
odor.
Back from other property lines, unless you take steps to minimize the odor. Interesting development this week was any type of administrative rule, which the agents have the authority to promulgate,
yeah.
they have to be reviewed by the Gov and by legislature.
Yeah.
Steve Noss, Republican from Whitewater, is co-chair of the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules.
Yes.
He said, okay, Evers guys, you should start over this whole process, and if you don't, I will try to use my power as co-chair of this committee to block this rule.
Well, okay, but when Secretary Pfaff sat in here this week, he said, we had an advisory committee. We had like 12 different meetings, regional meetings. We met with farmers, and you talk about Senator Nass. Here's my question. How proper is it for him to say, I'm going to kill this rule when he doesn't even have the final draft, JR?
I don't know about proper, but I know the politics of it, and that is that you have the groups you mentioned, they don't like this rule, and they're ones who tend to lean a little bit more Republican on certain things. So it's going to be interesting to watch, especially because it's coming in an environment where we have the trade war going on, we have tariffs, we have soybean farmers who are hurting to sell their products.
Record number of dairy farmers going out of business.
Dairy farmers are looking for places to sell their products because what's going on. I mean, like, there's
milk prices in the tank.
All kinds of problems, and so one of Noss's points was, this is the worst time possible to do this. It's going to cause farms to go out of business.
Well, I understand. Okay, now let's hear a little bit of the give and take on this issue, both from the newsmakers that I taped and the press conference in the Capitol. Please.
These changes would have significant chilling effect on Wisconsin's dairy community and on the businesses that support it. Livestock farms are already heavily regulated by a host of state laws. More regulations are not what our farmers need as they struggle to recover from years of depressed milk prices.
Agriculture's changed an awful lot in the last 13 years, and this rule has not been updated since that time. We do not regulate. All we're providing is we're providing them with a toolbox in which these local units of government then can make their own decisions if they permit this or not.
In some cases, they'll prevent farmers from being able to expand in place, maybe cause some unintended consequences because of the growth in those setbacks, which is pretty dramatic from what we currently have in the rule. We're also worried about sort of the blurring between this standard and the standard for CAFOs when it comes to runoff management. And finally, we're worried about what local control will mean, particularly with the new setbacks. We think a lot more projects will end up having to seek a local variance.
It's important to know that there are parts of the rule that are outdated and frankly simply indefensible. The setbacks are insufficient to protect neighboring property values, as has been shown by some recent Department of Revenue decisions. The odor standards actually allow farms to get odor credits for practices that the University of Missouri has shown in some cases to increase odor rather than decrease it. And the cap on permit fees is a decade old and completely insufficient to cover a municipality's costs.
JR, I want to talk about the State Supreme Court because they began their term this month, and it's got a new look. It's very interesting to me. that for the first time in 45 years, Justice Abramson, who chose not to seek re-election, and we wish her well on her health, she's been replaced by Brian Hagedorn, and I'm struck, 4 of the 7 court justices are new since 2015. Let me name them. Justice Rebecca Grassl Bradley and Justice Dan Kelly, Justice Rebecca Dallet, and Justice Brian Hagedorn, elected in April to take the Abrams seat. The reason I wanted to land on this and this, because I just want to point out the two major cases that they have to decide. Number one, the validity, the legality of the lame duck legislation, and number two, the challenges to Governor Evers' budget vetoes. So, new court, new look. Any PSs before we go to your stock picks?
No, not really. It's going to be interesting to see the perception that courts become more partisan over the years. Does that court surprise us at all and show and not and vote ways you wouldn't expect? That's what I'm watching. Do these justices at any time vote some way it really goes, wow, I'm surprised he or she voted that way.
Okay. And let's just point out, Justice Kelly is up for election next April. Mm-hmm. And he announced he rounded out his campaign staff today with 2 appointments. Okay, let's go to your stock picks. You want to go back to ADA's district attorneys?
This has been interesting, the politics of this, because, look, Governor Evers had a point. He wanted in the budget originally with Milwaukee County to add 3 positions. So actually not add them, but they're called program revenue. Basically, they're grants that fund these positions sometimes in district attorney's offices. He wanted to switch that to general purpose revenue, basically state money,
yep,
which makes the funding stream more reliable. You have to worry about the grants going away. Republicans nixed it. In shaking up where these positions went compared to what Republicans wanted, he benefited Milwaukee County. That created the opportunity for Republicans to jump and say, aha, once again, Tony Evers is trying to benefit Milwaukee County at the expense of the rest of us. It is a persistent theme we've heard from Republicans about Evers since day one. Even go back before that, when Evers won, you know, Robin Voss is basically of Milwaukee and Dane counties, and that's it. It's something to keep hammering over.
Well, the governor's first set of appointments, you remember the press release? Mm-hmm. Well, is the governor going to name anybody who isn't from Milwaukee County? Excuse me.
And here's part of what they got into. There's a study out there about caseloads, and it shows if you look at the caseloads versus the number of assisted DAs these counties have, Milwaukee County's at 115% as of August of 2018. So why do they get more? And when you dig down a little bit more, the 5 counties I named off that got one less compared to the Republican plan, they range from 41% of the needed FTEs to handle their caseloads, mm-hmm, to 62%. But Milwaukee County, people tell me, handles much more complex cases than a place like Monroe case. This is the way life is. We're also in a position where Evers wants more of a focus on things like diversion. You know, there's a new outlook or new thought process about how to charge people, how to sentence them, those kinds of things. More complex cases, so yeah, the caseloads more, you know, they have enough FTEs for their caseloads in Milwaukee County, but the caseloads are heavier lift per case. But the politics are fascinating to me about how it's constantly about Evers only wants to benefit Milwaukee. They're driving on this message over and over in Republicans of it's all about Milwaukee and Madison for Tony Evers.
Well, okay, but so there's been a lot of machinations back and forth, mm-hmm, in terms of where these 65 ADAs go. And we also are going to improve the pay of our public defenders. That's part of this package, too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And one last thing, don't forget, even though Republicans talk quite about Milwaukee getting more, 2 counties are getting more under the Evers plan versus the GOP plan, Sheboygan and Washington. Did not vote for Tony Evers last fall.
Thanks for that context. Mixed.
Juvenile justice. So we've got movement. Remember this plan, moving away from Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, northern Wisconsin.
Close those, convert them to medium security adult.
Going
prisons.
To regional facilities for most offenders and a couple of secure facilities for most serious ones. This week a committee signed off on, I think, 4 counties' proposals, mm-hmm, for these regional facilities. They are over budget, so more money than we have allocated to pay for them and have fewer beds than what we were expecting to have. I ask you about this because to me it strikes at the rush in 2018 to close Lincoln Hills, it's a deadline to close it, and to move to a new system. They rushed. Remember, Steve? They wanted to get done this spring before they went home because they wanted to cover Scott Walker's butt because there was this problem with these youth prison.
Yes.
Wanting to get away from that system to a new one, and so progress for seek re-election.
Yep.
The problem is the rush, nobody had an idea of what a youth facility would cost, a regional facility. We didn't find out even a guess until counselors were going, okay, here's my plan. Well, wait a second. The first plan came at $40 million. They allocated 80. That was for one. It just shows you, I think, the early rush put them in a position of they got to find more money now if they want to fund all these positions And how are they going to house people? What are they going to do with
them? Wasn't it Fond du Lac County who said, because of the cost overruns, don't put one here?
Yeah. Oh, and don't, by the way, before they approved, Dane County, Brown County, Milwaukee County, Racine County.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the northern, that two-thirds of the state land-wise going west and north of Madison and Green Bay. The same time, the kids mostly come from that line south and east.
Southeast Wisconsin.
It's where the kids are, which is part of what they want to do is get kids where they're from so they can see family and friends.
Family support. Okay, and you're following as someone who isn't going to be a federal judge. Go ahead.
Look, we've known for a while that Gordon Gilberto was not going to get confirmed to the federal court in Milwaukee, okay?
To replace former
Judge Randa, who stepped down in 2016,
Rudolph Randa, yeah.
So this process works in that there's a federal nominating commission that the two U.S. senators have created. They identify candidates for them to Baldwin
House.
And to Johnson. They look at him, so in the White House. White House picks someone from that list. There's your nominee.
Yep.
Well, after he was identified as a candidate, White House picked him. Some comments came to light from past about a gay marriage decision and diversity. Baldwin said, whoa, I know about this before, and she withheld her blue slip. The blue slip tradition is in the Senate. If you have a nominee for a court seat, the home state senator has a blue slip that they cannot return, then it's respected. Now, Republicans—
Which blocks a confirmation hearing.
Republicans don't do that anymore for appeals court seats, but for the district court seats, it's still in effect. So Baldwin blocked his nomination.
Okay.
All right? This week, the nominating commission was reconstituted to find new candidates to fill this spot.
What had been his background? Private attorney?
Private attorney. He clerked for Randa. He was a former federal prosecutor, I believe. But what this tells you, this is the final straw that his nomination is not going to happen, because even though he was nominated last time by the White House, they renominated about 50 people back in January, did not send his nomination back to the Senate. What's interesting to me is this process for the new appointment, okay? The deadline is October 16th to apply.
Yeah.
We are getting into a time crunch to fill that seat, because think about politics in the U.S. Senate right now. If you have candidates applying for October 16th, how quickly can you identify a candidate, this commission, the Six-Member Commission, consensus candidates, get Johnson involved in sign-off, send the White House, get one picked on the floor of the Senate before January 1. Why is January 1 important? Because January 1 becomes an election year. Think of the pressure that Baldwin will be under starting January 1st to not confirm a Trump appointee. One of Trump's calling cards, right, for re-election is the 150 now, I believe, lifetime appointments to the federal bench.
And Mitch McConnell's mission is to get as many approved, confirmed as soon as possible.
So long as that blue slip tradition is respected for district court nominees, she holds the cards. And some people I talk to just don't think that spot will get filled until after next November's election.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm glad to be back. And that's Rewind for the week of September 16th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.